So first of all, just saying, my name is Jason Miller, and everything I say, even though I'm an employee of the General Conference and Hope Channel, everything I say, this is all in my personal capacity. I'm a lawyer, so this disclosure is very familiar to my world. So everything I'm going to say, this is just my personal thoughts as a random church member, just caring about the church. But yeah, so my background, I'm originally from Michigan. My mom, she's a generationalist. And family goes back like six generations of Adventism. My dad, he's a convert from Catholicism from the south side of Chicago. So I kind of had both city and country background of my parents growing up. I grew up born and raised in Michigan. Because of that, you could say from the Adventist perspective, my ideological swing was very much more toward the conservative side. After all, the Michigan Conference is known as one of the most conservative conferences. And I only knew one conference president growing up. That would be Jay Gallimore. And so that was my idea of Adventism. I went through Adventist schools pretty much my whole life. Junior Academy, Day Academy, Supporting Ministry Boarding Academy, Andrews University, until when I went to law school. There's no such thing as an Adventist law school right now. So I went to the Catholic University of America for law school and ended up in Washington, D.C. That's kind of where my journey has taken me. I'm still around this area now. As for my favorite Thanksgiving dish, man, I think I love all the different ways you can make vegetarian meat because I've been a vegetarian my whole life. So I love the creativity of Adventists and vegetarians when it comes to Thanksgiving and how the different ways we can make our meat.
As you heard there, Jason is a lawyer from the Catholic University of America. Adventist education, Catholic education. It doesn't get more antithetical when it comes to theological ideas in here. However, we are here today to talk about politics. So let's continue seeing what is the specialty that Jason took when he was at the Catholic University of America.
So my specialty was law and public policy. And there's kind of a story of how I entered this way. Basically, when I was finishing up at the Supporting Ministry Academy, boarding academy that I was going to, I knew I was going to be going off to Andrews University, but I wasn't quite sure what I was going to study. I knew I liked a variety of things. I knew what my passions were, politics, religious liberty, policy, all this kind of stuff. But as a good Adventist, I'd always kind of been taught, stay away from politics, stay away from all the dirty stuff. But ironically, it was one of my teachers at the school that encouraged me on my graduation day that I should really look at getting into the world of policy, politics, and even law, because in the last days, we need good Adventist men and women to be in positions of influence. And after all, you even have Ellen White quotes that talk about that. And so that's what really got me going down the route of law and policy and possibly even religious liberty.
It is sad but true that usually as Adventists, we're discouraged from engaging politically. We are told, stay in religion, do not go into politics. However, as citizens of the United States of America, we are affected by politics. Let it be Republican or Democratic legislation, it affects our lives and our everyday living. So it is important that we're politically activated, of course, around the issues that matter most, issues around human rights, issues that are compatible with the gospel. Jason and I continue discussing this important matter when it comes to one of those rights, which is the right of religious liberty, but also embedded in the First Amendment, which is freedom of speech, and how important that is in order to have a civil society that respects differences of opinion. So here we have Jason's thoughts on that matter with an example on religious liberty in a case from a Seventh-day Adventist.
Well, if you look at the history of the founding, the reason why it was an amendment is because there was basically a battle between the two sides, whether you even needed to publish rights. In fact, one of the arguments was if you put free speech in writing, it's only going to be what's called a parchment right. And our founders, a lot of them believed in natural rights, this idea that the freedoms we have are not something that government can give or take away because they come from God. They come from the Creator, as Jefferson referenced there in the Declaration of Independence. And so really our founders saw these rights written that are in the Bill of Rights, you know, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution as something that really stemmed from the natural law. And we're just writing them down because some people rightly understood that if they weren't written down at some point, they could be threatened and challenged. And you even see that today. And the funny thing is, today in society, you can see it from both either the right or the left. Essentially, when you have people who love power, Free speech is a threat to power because it challenges absolute domination and it gives chance for a diversity of views. And diversity of views is one of the best ways to check too much power. So one of the most important Supreme Court cases to me is one of the cases that established kind of how modern day religious liberty is seen. And that was a case of a Seventh-day Adventist in the 1950s, 60s. Name was Sherbert. And it's kind of fascinating because it had to do with working on Sabbath and getting fired for working on Sabbath and that kind of thing. And that case was kind of fascinating to me because it was a Seventh-day Adventist that kind of set the stage for modern day views of religious freedom. And this was all part of the civil rights movement, ironically. So basically in the case, you had a Seventh-day Adventist, they didn't want to work on Sabbath, they were fired and they went and applied for employment benefits. And the argument was, no, you don't get employment benefits because your Sabbath is not a protected case, a protected situation. And it came all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, interestingly led by the liberal civil rights justices at the time, said, no, keeping the Sabbath, that's an important right. That's part of religious liberty. Religious liberty is part of these other civil rights we're really starting to recognize, because this is in the same mode at the time where you're desegregating public schools and you're allowing interracial marriage, all this kind of thing. So religious liberty is part of one of these rights as well. Seventh-day Adventists, historically, we've liked to be involved in religious liberty, and I think, you know, we were aware of it, but I'm not sure that we were really the ones who were pushing it legally. And it was kind of divisive in the religious liberty freedom or community at the time, because the dominant religious groups, whether they be evangelicals or even Catholics, they already kind of were getting their rights and they didn't really care to let these Sabbath keepers have their rights. They already got their Sunday rights, and so who cares about the Sabbath keepers?
What Jason said there is quite peculiar. One group of people does not care about the other people's rights, even though it's about religious liberty, even though they're both religious groups. It is quite similar to today. We only seek for our benefit and not for the benefit of everyone. So I asked Jason, why is this divide so evident nowadays, where one group of people only cares about their benefits, their rights, their legislation, and the other group of people as well? They only care about their legislation, their rights, and their motivations, and not what makes everyone successful. It reminds me of a quote that my wife has in her classroom. It says, "Fair is not everyone getting the same. Fair is everyone getting whatever they need in order to be successful." So why are we so divided for our success as people in this country?
So that's a good question. And that divide has actually been there since our church was founded. You had that divide. You had during the time of the Civil War, there was a big debate on whether Adventists should vote. And some Adventists said, we should vote, we should support Lincoln, we should support, you know, the cause of the North, we should support the cause of abolition at the ballot box. And then you had others that said, no, if you vote, you're part of the corrupt system. And during this time, you had people like Uriah Smith that were saying some pretty strong things against the American government. And our Adventist leaders kind of took an in-between position where they said, look, we're not going to tell you what to do. But we do think there are some firm principles you should have. And then James White, in an editorial called The Nation and The Review, he even says that our people, to a man, if they voted, they all voted for Lincoln. So making it clear that our church wasn't going to take a public stand on certain politicized issues, but we were going to be involved where we felt there was moral significance. And that divide exists today in the Adventist world, because on issues of religious liberty, we've always been clear, all right, that's for sure. That's strong. We're going to get involved in those. But then when it comes to some other issues that have moral significance, we like to maybe weigh in, but we're more cautious about our official involvement.
And that distinction right there is quite peculiar. Why is it that we are involved in religious liberty as an organization and not other issues of moral significance? Is it because of legal repercussions?
It's a combination of things. In some ways, sure, legal, yes. Also, because we're an international global church, we want the freedom to be able to operate everywhere. We don't want to be too associated with partisan causes. And especially today, moral issues are becoming divided very much on a partisan lens. And it really, it doesn't matter what the moral issue is. whether it's issues of marriage or life issues or racial issues, pretty much in the modern society, you can take an issue and people automatically associate it with one of the ideological sides. And that's problematic for the Adventist Church.
Point well taken. Jason does explain that one of the issues is that we have partisan politics here in the United States. We don't have a parliamentary system where there is need for input from different parties, coalitions that need to be formed. But that does not excuse us from not being politically engaged and looking for those issues of moral significance and advocating for those. So how can we do that and not fall into the trap of partisan politics?
So we do have a model from the 19th century with how some of our early pioneers or even a little bit later handled these issues. So you, when it came to the Civil War and slavery, you had Adventists strongly speaking out in our church publications. You had us voting on issues. And then later on, when you had the temperance movement, you had the Women's Christian Temperance Union, and you had Adventists very involved in temperance issues, including even after this organization, WCTU, started promoting Sunday laws. And Ellen White even said, work with the people where you can work with them. So don't pull out of the coalition because they're fighting against some of our issues. Find the places where you have common ground and then go from there. And so when it came to temperance issues, we would work with the temperance groups. When it came to Sunday law stuff, we would pull out and we'd work with other groups. And in fact, you even had the situation in the 1880s, a lot of Seventh-day Adventists, they had been associated with the Republican Party because of the temperance issues. But then when the Sunday law came out, they went and kind of joined the Democrats, but then they found themselves with the anti-temperance group. And so Adventists kind of found themselves heterodox where they didn't really fit with either party. And so I think we kind of need a model like that.
We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Disruptive Adventism. Today, we're talking about the importance of politics and how to be politically engaged without being partisan. On the topic of partisanship, it seems like these parties, the Democrats, Republicans, or whatever it is, they feel like teams instead of parties that actually appeal to the voters and try to collaborate with one another. It feels like whatever the team says, Republican team or Democrat team, people just vote for that instead of thinking deeply about the issues. So we continue discovering why is it that we're so polarized.
So yeah, in America, we are getting more polarized, which is making this more difficult. In fact, I've even had this quote where my fear after, say, the 2016 election is that you could actually have Trump churches and Hillary churches. And the sad truth is, if you look at our churches demographically, we kind of already have that. We're trying to resist that trend by having a global community, but we're starting to go down that path. And I think the reason why we're going down that path is because we're strongly influenced by the culture around us. The Christian community, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, is not immune to what goes on outside our hallowed church walls. We still are in the world and we still are impacted by those things. And for us, if we aren't very careful and thinking about how we can relate to the other side, how we can connect to the other side, find points where we disagree with even our own side, we're going to just kind of get caught up in the trends. And you have this in America today where everyone's getting put into groups. In fact, one of the fascinating things that came out of the 2016 presidential election, someone said, now this is from the conservative perspective, but I think it is enlightening for this issue, is white working class Americans had been told for the longest time that everyone was part of a minority group and a special interest group. And so white working class Americans, the largest minority group, finally decided to vote together. And when they voted together, they ended up electing their champion. And the argument was that this is what the liberals had kind of brought on themselves by telling everyone, oh, you're Black, you're Latino, you're this identity, you're that identity. And so white working class Americans said, fine, we're part of our own identity and we're going to elect our own person. And so one argument is that the 2016 election is kind of the conservatives now doing the same thing that the liberals had already started in sectoring society by division. This argument of a mosaic versus the melting pot, if you will.
It is quite peculiar to see what Jason stated as happening today. Parties are trying to section us and divide us instead of unite us. They're trying to do what the gospel is against. The gospel is against division. The gospel is for union. But even among those who profess to know Christ and who profess the gospel, we are divided. Divided on opinions of theological significance. We are going to turn into an area of expertise, a series that Jason wrote for Compass Magazine on same-sex marriage and the effects on religious liberty. Here he is explaining the effects that it has taken on our institutions.
So during the oral arguments, the Solicitor General for the U.S. government, for the Obama administration, was asked by one of the Supreme Court justices a question related to the tax exempt status of faith-based institutions that continued to hold to traditional views of marriage and, you know, kind of enforce that. And the Solicitor General straight up admitted that that would be a problem that could be an issue. And so we're starting to see that now, even some of our Adventist universities, they're trying to figure out how do we accommodate LGBT individuals while still staying consistent with the Adventist message. And you have at Andrews, you know, you've had more official attempts to try to do that by creating groups at Southern. You've had some more unofficial attempts. And then you have the Adventist universities in the West Coast where they've kind of got a hodgepodge of situations where you have professors putting up, this is a safe space sticker and all that kind of thing. And so this is an issue for us as Adventist institutions that we really haven't figured out how to deal with. And it's come because of the legalization of same-sex marriage. So from a legal perspective, Kennedy, when he wrote the opinion, he said that people could disagree on the issue of same-sex marriage. They could have good and honorable beliefs and they could express them. Though one criticism of what he said that the dissent pointed out is that he focused more on churches and not so much the public square. And so one thing that that the religious liberty community has kind of taken from that is they've tried to reinstitutionalize religion into our universities and institutions. One of the organizations that's been involved in religious liberty cases, ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom, even created a guide for universities to basically show, look, if you really want to make a stand on this, you have to show that it's a big religious issue for you and it's not just kind of a social policy. So from a legal perspective, show that it's not just social policy, but it's actually core to your religious identity, because the Supreme Court and courts in general have been a lot more sympathetic when you show genuine religious ties instead of just kind of loose philosophy belief, almost like how Adventists, there are some issues we hold much more core, like the Sabbath, versus issues that are a little more flexible, like gossip juice drinking. And this is exactly what my alma mater, Andrews University, struggled with a few years ago when it revised its policy. And plenty of conservatives, I think even maybe Fulcrum 7, have given criticism of what Andrews did. But the point was that the institution was struggling with this very issue. And I guess the advice I would say on this is focus more on allowing the student to be there on campus, but have your code of conduct as such that it's tied to your religious mission. And so, and this is one thing actually that almost all the institutions, even the conservative ones, have realized is you don't focus on the identity of the person, but it's more on the behavior and then how the behavior affects someone else. And I know that, you know, when I was a student at Andrews in the dorm, you had situations where RAs, you know, walked into students' dorm rooms and they had suspicions about the people, and they walked in on some things that made them very concerned, and sometimes they engaged in disciplinary actions. But the key was they were trying to do it based on behavior and upholding the code of ethics and not just the identity of the individuals. Though that became hard because the RAs had suspicions about the identities, and so that's where it gets really messy and tricky.
Now, as a listener, you may be thinking, why this issue? Why is disruptive Adventism talking with Jason Miller about this specific issue? Well, Jason did write a very comprehensive article series on Compass Magazine about this issue, and this is what he likes to talk about. But I want to use this example that he's given to illustrate how we are divided and how we sometimes think that other individuals may not think like us, may not act like us, and we want to separate them from society or even our institutions. So I asked Jason, what is something that we can do in order to counteract that and think a little bit more into the unifying principles that the gospel gives us?
So Jesus summed it up very well when he was with the woman caught in adultery. He said, "Neither do I condemn you, go and sin no more." There's two portions there. Neither do I condemn you and the go and sin no more. And whether you're conservative or liberal, you may struggle with one or both of those aspects. So the go and sin no more part is where we have to recognize that there are moral issues, there is right and wrong, and we do need to take stands on these issues, whether privately or even corporately as an organization. So we need to recognize in some way these issues. But the neither do I condemn you, that's the key part, and that's recognizing the individuality of the person and all these issues that we kind of talk about related, say, to sexual orientation. They're all based, I argue, on struggles of human nature. And so we have to recognize that all of us are struggling at some level. And so while institutions may need to take stands, what's really more important is helping the individual. And I'll say for me personally, I don't think it's my job to necessarily go and tell all my gay friends, you need to become straight. Because that's something, even if I have an ideal of what I think God intended and how God created us, they have to recognize for themselves. And so I think the way to do that is to support them for their identity as a child of God, treat them in a similar way to how I would treat anyone else. And that doesn't mean I have to change my belief, but I treat the person. This is how Jesus did. He treated the woman caught in adultery as a normal person, but he also didn't excuse necessarily his moral convictions on the issue.
A great reminder from Jason that we are all children of God, we all deserve respect, and we can be friends even with those who we disagree, because Jesus looks at us the same. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back to talk more politics with Jason Miller. We're back with more Disruptive Adventism. Today we're talking about politics and the importance of being activated and part of our political system. We asked Jason, is remaining politically inactive, so in other words, not going to the ballot, not casting our votes, not advocating for any moral issue of any significance, the safest way to live?
Well, staying out of politics is the safe choice in the sense where it checks us out of being involved in things. And that's why a lot of people do that. That's why a lot of people don't get involved. It's easier to be passive and just kind of be protected by the will of the majority. However, I don't know if it's the most honest thing. I do think we need to be careful when we go in, but I think if we are true to our conscience and convictions, then those will be expressed in a public way. You see that with the life of Jesus. You see that with biblical characters. Now, how that's expressed, and that's where the real divide comes in, can be different because you have some people like Daniel who wasn't exactly an activist, but still found ways to defend his rights while also upholding authority. And then you had others who are a little more vocal, such as some of the minor prophets when they came to calling out evils in society.
The minor prophets, indeed a great example. Those books that are very short at the end of the Old Testament and are usually not read by many, but that contain powerful, powerful stories. The spirit of the minor prophets has definitely left our church, and we need to recover in order to not only advocate and call out these issues that are happening in our society, but also to help those that are most in need. We continue with Jason and stories about when he has felt that he needed to be politically activated and vocal about the issues that prevail in our society.
Man, that's a huge question, and there's a lot of different ways I could answer that. And I think I may answer that in a way that could be very controversial to one side, because I think back to one of the times when I made one of my most, you could say, public stands repeatedly. And that was during the 2016 presidential election. The reason why that's significant is a lot of people knew I had been an elected Republican Party official. I'd been associated with the right-wing politically. My resume read very strongly on the right. And in the primaries and then even in the general, during the campaign on my Facebook page and social media, I felt it necessary to speak out, not so much just to attack a person, though I clearly had strong criticisms for Donald Trump, who's now our president, but rather about how issues were being presented and how they were being framed in a sort of immoral way. And so I basically criticized conservatives who were supporting a man who had a very immoral lifestyle, who had some values and ideological positions that were not really consistent with the Adventist way of thinking. And this got criticism of me, not just from Adventists, but even from some of the Catholic classmates and professors that I was with in DC. And for me, I felt it was important because I felt that God had given me knowledge and experience to be able to speak out on these issues. And as a Seventh-day Adventist from a American minority faith-based organization, religion in this case, I was called to kind of express my views on policy. And so I spoke out during the 2016 election, primary and general, in ways that really made a lot of people not so happy. And I guess if I'm going to get the most personal, the biggest arguments I had were with my own family. I had strong disagreements. They weren't malicious, but they were very intense with parents, grandparents, other relatives who were who felt they had no choice but to vote for the lesser of the two evils, which they felt was our current president, now Donald Trump. And I felt that they were kind of not really thinking about this in a moral way, regardless of how they actually voted. Their mindset, I felt, was not really in line with what a Seventh-day Adventist should be. And so I kind of, in discussions and in arguments and then phone calls and that kind of thing, I called them out directly on these issues, pointing out how Seventh-day Adventists, I believe, should think about these issues and what our biblical stand should be when looking at issues of policy. So that mentality is such where there's no person that's a savior. Every person that runs for office is going to be flawed. And if you're going to vote for someone, make sure you can at least see their negative side, because we are carnal human nature creatures. And we need to recognize that the devil doesn't take a political side. He can play on both sides. And so I think anyone who's going to be making political decisions, if you're an Adventist, you need to be able to see the devilish parts of your own side.
See the devil in your own side. That is quite something to say, because the devil does work in both sides. And it makes me reflect the importance of voting our conscience and thoroughly researching our candidates, and not just voting because we're part of the Republican or the Democrat or the Libertarian team, but truly see what are the good things that can be enacted not only for our benefit, but for the benefit of all people. The final question for Jason is, how can we recover our human decency and to see each other again as one and not divided like the political parties want us to be?
That's a great question, and I have two answers, one that's more organizational and one that's more personal. On the organizational level, when the whole issue of women's ordination was being hotly debated, there was a Sabbath school lesson on Acts 15. And as some people know, I've been part of Hope Sabbath School, which is Hope Channel's program that deals with a Sabbath school lesson. And I was assigned to teach that lesson, both on the TV and then also in a local church. And as I studied through that lesson, I found for me that the Acts 15 solution is to kind of depoliticize the issue. I looked at the circumcision issue and the final words that came out of the Acts 15 council. And I noticed that when the council gave a description, they didn't really say much about the issue. They just kind of left it, you know, focused on the key things. And so my point on that is, I think we need to not focus so much on the specific polarizing issues. Like if we talk about women's ordination or LGBT rights or anything that is controversial. We need to talk about it less as an ideological battle and more as something where we may not all agree and we still need to be brothers and sisters and get along. Focus more on the personal humanity side of the person and not so much on the issue. And then on a personal level, what I found for me is most helpful is having off the record conversations where I get to know and become friends with the opposite side. So thinking back again to the women's ordination issue, I remember when I was at Andrews, I would have lunch and sit in friends with one side and have the discussion. And then 2 days later, I'd be in offices and meetings with other friends on the other side who would be having the exact same discussion, but from the opposite side. And so I think and what I found is there's actually not that many Adventists that have that opportunity where they literally go back and forth and they're in the social circles of both sides. We're kind of polarizing. So I think we need to make sure that our social circle, our friendships, our personal life incorporates people of all the different views. Because when you love a person the way Jesus did, and this is what he did, he had social circles that included the Pharisees, that included the publicans and sinners. He was friends with everyone. And I think if we can find a way to be friends with everyone, that can kind of help take some of the tension out of this, because it's a lot harder to say nasty things towards a friend in public as it is to say about your ideological opponent.
Good words from Jason that reminds us to expand our social circle and to look for others' opinions, to try to understand each other, even when we may disagree. Here is Jason's final words. Hope you enjoyed this episode.
Sure. So going back off what I've just kind of said here, I want to challenge you to find, hang out, become friends with someone who maybe thinks very differently than you. One of the most rewarding things for me in my life is having good friends that I have strong disagreements with. We can sit there for 6 hours and argue back and forth, and at the end of this day, we're still friends, we're still bros, we can give each other hugs, and we may think differently, we may identify differently, we may see the world very differently, but as children of God, if we're all going to be in heaven, then we better start preparing now.
You've been listening to Disruptive Adventism. We hope that today's topic helped you to think and change something about your practices, about your faith, about your Adventism. If you want to subscribe, make sure to go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast. We'll be there. And make sure to give us a review if you like what you're listening to. If you want to support, make sure to go to patreon.com/disruptiveadventism. It helps us pay our bills and produce the content that you're listening to. And if you want to socialize, make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram or on Twitter, and hit us up whenever you need anything. We'll be there to support you. Thank you for listening today. We hope you join us next time. And as always, we invite you to be disruptive.